Last week, I began speaking about the concept of an Av, of a patriarch, or a founder of a nation, and also some of the ideas that are involved, the structure, what's involved in being an Av. In other words, I had been speaking previously about Avraham Avinu and the different concepts which are involved in Avraham Avinu. And last week I had now begun to generalize into a structure. What is the general structure? What are the general ideas which are concerned with all the others? This week what I'm going to do is continue and really finalize and specialize and go into more detail. What is an Av all really all about? In other words, our Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, if we do not look at their Maisim specifically or in detail, but rather look at the general idea of what constitutes an Av, what is the idea, what is the meaning of an Av, this is what I want to go into now. And then eventually, of course, I'll return to the idea of course, Yitzchak and continue into the Avos. As we continue, our understanding of history as the expression of the Mashiachin, which is what I've been doing until now. Now, when we look at an Av, we can best understand that in terms of analyzing the Tafkidim, or the responsibilities, the obligations, the charges, the duties of an Av. And when you think about it, basically it comes down to the fact that there are four tafkidim. In other words, all the Avos have four different tasks. And their history, the stories about them, reflect basically these four tafkidim. Now, under each tafkid, we can look at four different areas. Or rather, under each tafkid, we can look on four different areas. First, we can understand what is the tafkid, the definition, what is the task itself, in a clear way. The second area which we want to investigate is the how is the tafkid to be understood from the concept of a merkava, which we said was the essential idea of the others. The third idea is that each Av has a different chelik in that tafkid. In other words, each Av performed the tafkid in a certain way that perhaps was different than the other Avos in as respect to that particular task. There's a third area to examine the different ways that each Av handled the different tafkidim. And the fourth area is that how is the successful conclusion of each Av. What does that have to do with Klal Yisrael? How did that benefit the descendants of the Avos? Okay? So we've got four areas. We're going to look at each tafkid, each purpose, and there are four. We're going to look at the concept of the tafkidim, how they are built, how they are founded in the concept of Merkava. The third idea is that each Av's chelik in that tafkid, each Av's singular, unique contribution in that task. And the fourth would be, how does this affect Klal Yisrael? In what way? This is what we're going to do in this year. Each Av, as I said previously, had four tafkidim, four purposes. Let's begin understanding the tasks of the Av. And as such, of course, when we understand all these ideas, all the tasks, and the different areas in those tasks, then you can look into the others in Chumash, of course, with a different eye. The first task or tafkid of the Av, of each Av, was to procure the concept of a Merkava. In other words, to make sure that they enter into an agreement with the Rabbeinu Shlalom and they become the Merkava. Okay, that's to initiate the stage. Or the state, I should say. So therefore, the first tafkid is to procure the concept of Merkava in the first place, to enter that state where they are a Merkava. Now, the Merkava, the term Merkava, which is chariot, is synonymous in idea with the word or term Yisrael and the term Misakin. All of them mean that whoever is a Merkava or whoever is Yisrael or whoever is masakin, means that they have the ability to influence the amount of ha'ora and hester of the Rabbanu Shalom Nebriya. They have the ability or the power to determine how much of the presence of God is revealed in the universe and how much of the absence of God is revealed in the universe. Of course, the Rabbanu Shalom is not controlled by the individual who has this power. He subjugates his amount of presence or absence according to the actions of the individual. In that sense, he voluntarily subjugates. That's the Rabbanu Shalom. Therefore, that's the concept of Masakin, or the concept of Yisrael Umerkava, that these individuals have the power of actually influencing the amount of the Rabbanu Shalom in the Bria, and therefore, of course, the repercussions of that, of course, is awesome in terms of the Bria itself, in terms of the proliferation of evil when God is more absent, and the proliferation of good things happening to the universe when God is present. Tremendous power at the hands of a Jew. Okay, therefore, the first task was to procure this concept. Therefore, we find that Avram initiated the concept. He was the first. He is the one who made this covenant with the Rabbanu Shalom at the outset. That's a bris ben Absarim, and that's the idea of the bris milah. We find that Yitzchak maintained the covenant. He didn't initiate, but he maintained the covenant. In other words, he kept up the tasks of the others in order to maintain the agreement that God has with the others. However, even with Avram and Yitzchak, it's possible for both of them to lose the agreement. So therefore, it took Yaakov to finalize the concept. When Yaakov observed all the tafkidim, then the Rabbanu Shalom sealed the covenant with the Yidin, with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and consequently, of course, to all their descendants. So, Avram is the initiator, Yitzchak is the maintainer, and Yaakov, of course, is the finalizer. And as a result, it now happens that the Jews, for all eternity, have this power, and of course, the Jews, as opposed to the other nations of the world, the Goyim, the Umas Olam, they do not have this power, having lost it. And that's a subject I will deal with after I finish the Ovis, the entire concept of Goy and Jew, and the entire structure of 6,000 years of history, how we understand it in the terms of Jewish history. That's a topic that I'll be dealing with later. In any case, now, where do we see this? We see this in when we say in Siddur, when we say Haidu, before Baruch Shama, if you're a Sfad, and after, if you're Ashkenaz, we say it, Asher Koras is Avram, that he made a covenant with Avram, Ushvuaso li Yitzchak, and he maintained his oath, which is the covenant to Yitzchak, by Yamideo, and he finalized it, and he established it, Yaakov to Yaakov, Lechoik, for an everlasting statute, the Israel to Israel and to their descendants, Bris Olam, an everlasting covenant. That's what that means. That sums up that tafkid. Avram initiated it, Yitzchak maintained it by maintaining the tafkidim of the Ov, and Yaakov, of course, finalized it. And we will see, when we talk about Yaakov, how mamish in the Chumash you could see that the Rabbanu Shalom finalized the concept of the Bris, which I'll show you then. It's mamish a remez in the Posek, that the initiation, of course, is open. The Bris Ben Absarim, we see clearly in the Chumash and the idea of Mila. But the finality of it, you see merumas in the Torah, that in Yisrael, the finality of the Bris, of course, it was achieved. Now, in terms of Klai Yisrael, this, of course, the power to influence the amount of Ha'ora, or the Shekhinah, and that Shekhinah is really the Ha'ora of the Rabbanu Shalom, the amount of power to bring the Shekhinah into the Bria, or to remove the Shekhinah from the Bria, was given over to their descendants. This is the idea of the Ovis as a Shirish. Each of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov was a shirish. What does that mean? That means that whenever they did an act, they could indent or impress a specific concept in their neshama. That neshama, which would be extremely great, would be parceled out, so to speak, and given to other individuals after them. That would be their descendants. As a result, all descendants who therefore have the neshama of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as their sherish, right, would then have the similar qualities or the indents of the original of us. So therefore, there was a certain period of time, which we'll talk about later, where any person's act would actually leave an impression on his neshama. And if that neshama was divided and given to others, they would automatically, intuitively feel those characteristics which the original individual indented or impressed on that neshama. As such, that's called the generation of Shrushim. So therefore, Avraham was a Shurish, Yitzchak and Yaakov. In other words, they had the power to influence or actually change their neshamas. Therefore, that's number one. And their neshamas would be roots to other neshamas. And as such, other neshamas later would actually feel the imprint internally, intuitively, actually without any avoda at all, because they have the neshama of the Ovis. So therefore, the Ovis as the power of being a Shirish, therefore meant that every time they did something, their descendants would benefit by the mere fact that the descendants would have the neshama of the Ovis in different halakhim. Therefore, since the first tafkid was to procure the concept of covenant, agreement or bris, which means to procure the power of a mesakin, and each of was involved in getting that tafkid, that purpose, they internalized it in their shirish by the fact that they were shroshim. They internalized it for all Klai Yisrael by the fact that they were shroshim. This is the first tafkid of the Ovis, the procurement of the concept of a mesakin. All three Ovis were involved in that avodah, and the fact that they gave it all to Klai Yisrael from the fact that they were shroshim. What is the next tafkid? Well, this is the first concept, or the first tafkid. And that obviously, a lot of the stories in the Chumash, the Maisim, of course, are involved in the idea that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov have to procure this concept of Misakin. What's the second tafkid? The second tafkid of each of is to promote the Ribbono Shel Olam, to promote the concept of Hashem as a melech or an adoin, as a king or a master of the universe. In other words, to promote the concept that God is an absolute authority, absolute supreme authority, the master of the universe. The idea of Yichud Shlitosoi, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is unique in his ability to control everything, and nothing could at all could withstand whatsoever the control of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a melech, that's an absolute king. This was the second tafkid, to promote that concept. Now, that tafkid itself is divided further, is subdivided in two sub-purposes. The first is that the Ov themselves had the avodah to perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the second is that they had to proclaim or publicize this concept. That's all in the idea of to promote the concept of Hashem as Melech. Now, in the idea of perception, each Ov had to work in seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam as a melech. It wasn't automatic because Avram certainly had to work, because Terach, who was his father, of course, believed in Avodah Zarah. But even Yitzchak and Yaakov had to work to understand this. It wasn't given over right away. What does that mean? All of us had to work to perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam, to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam as a melech. And they did it by their own yediyah, by their own laboring, and therefore understanding the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in that way, they engaged in philosophical inquiries and proofs to come to the understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Yediyah. And they also carried on the Emunah, which was the transmission that the Ribbono Shel Olam is a Melech, by Shem Ve'Eveh. Because Shem Ve'Eveh was still around at that time, in that yeshiva, which we know. And therefore, what they were teaching, of course, is a transmission of the tradition, that doctrine, that God is King, which they, of course, received all the way back to Adam Rishon. So the others had Yediyah and Emunah. First they had Yediyah, because they worked out understanding through philosophical proofs, the logical proofs that the Ribbono Shel Olam is a Melech, and the common ways that, of course, Avraham Avinu looked at the Bria, and he saw purpose and design in the Bria. Therefore he understood. Chazal gave some understanding of some of his reasoning processes. But not only Avraham who did that, but also Yitzchak and Yaakov. And also, so they got a yediyah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. They also had to work on Emunah in the sense that they listened to the transmission that was given by Shem Ve'Eveh, which went all the way back from Adam Rishon, that doctrine or tradition which was transmitted. And in the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there was Shem Ve'Eveh. Now, where do we see that? We see that in the Shmona Esrei. Chazal say, or the Mephoshim say, that it says in Shmona Esrei, Elokeinu v'lekei avoseinu, the God who is the God of our fathers, the God Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak v'Yaakov, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Why does it say the God who is the God of our fathers? And then it says the God of Avraham, God of Yitzchak and God of Yaakov. You already said that. We're saying the God of our fathers. And our fathers are Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov. The answer to that is that each of knew the Rebbeinu Shlom or perceived them because of two directions. One was from the directions of Avoseinu, meaning the Emunah, the historical transmission, which they got, Yitzchak and Yaakov got from Avraham, and Yaakov from Yitzchak and Avraham, of course, from Shem Ve'ev, and so on. But also, each one worked out his own Yediyah. So therefore, God was the God of their fathers, which is the historical transmission, that's the Emunah. And also, he was also individually the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Because each one labored to understand the Rebbeinu Mitzan his own Chakira and Moifus, Mitzan his own demonstrations into the universe to understand that the Rebbeinu Shem is an Odun and Melech. And that's what that's why it says twice in Shmona Esrei, to understand that the perception of the Rebbeinu Shem has to come from two directions. Your own Yegiya to verify the idea of the existence of the Rebbeinu Shem, and then he's a Melech in the Bria, through reasoning, which is what they did, and it can be known, contrary to what Goyim think, and Apikosim. And the second idea, of course, is to believe the transmission, the Emunah, that each one gets as a result of Shem Ve'eva, or because you get it from the Ovis themselves, which was in the case of Yitzchak and Yaakov. Okay, that is the first task, subtask, under the general task of to promote the Rebbeinu Shlom as an Odoin, as a Melach. The second task was to proclaim or publicize this concept. And of course, we find the others engaged in this, promoting to publicize the Rebbeinu Shlom throughout the Bria as much as possible. But each one, of course, did it in their different ways, and they did it in different extents. Avraham, of course, would seem to have done it the most, Avraham Avinu, by making Gerim and going out and proclaiming throughout the world that the Rebbeinu Shlom is the Melech. Yitzchak and Yaakov would have done that not to the extent of Avraham, more so in their own being as a model, because that's what Avimelech said to Yitzchak and so on, that I see that you're a man of God. How does he see that? Because through the righteousness of Yitzchak himself, he was able to perceive that, and so on. So therefore, each individual, of course, they proclaim that and publicize this to the people around them, and whoever would come in to listen, and so on. But in any case, all the others were involved, and most specifically Avraham, in the tafkid of to publicize or to proclaim this concept. That is the concept of promoting the Rebbeinu Shlom. Either first is to perceive, and second is to proclaim. That is the general tafkid. Now, in terms of its base of a Merkava, we understand, because what's the idea of a Merkava? To bring the Rebbeinu Shlom, who's the driver, to the world, to the Olam, in other words, to all creation. In other words, to bring the concept of his Malchusoi, which was hidden, to bring it to all creation. So that's the Merkava. The Merkava, when we say that Chazal and the Merkava, the idea of the Merkava is to bring the driver to the destination, which means to bring the Hasaga of the Malchus of the Rebbeinu Shlom to creation. Therefore, the Merkava automatically indicates that one of the Tafkidim is automatically going to be to promote the Rebbeinu Shlom as an Odoin or Melech on the Bria. It's attached. So this, of course, is the second tafkid. Now, in terms of the how it happens to, how it influences Klal Yisrael, it influences Klal Yisrael in interesting ways. How do we feel this? This fact that the Ovos indented or they impressed upon the Neshama this Yegiya, this effort to perceive God and proclaim it. This has its implications in the Neshama in terms of what's called in Yiddish Pintele Yid. There's a certain concept called Pintele Yid, which means that if you walk over to a Jew who's fried and you begin talking about religion or whatever, religion, God, Judaism, whatever, you're going to awaken something internally that lies in his soul. You awaken it. That's called a Pintele Yid. That point, even though it seems that he's gone from Yiddishkeit,
when he's fried, he's machal Shabbos and so on, and he has no belief in God and so on. However, every Jew, because they have one of the shroshim of the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, automatically has a desire internally to perceive, to know the Ribbono Shel, and to become close to him, to become dovek in the Ribbono Shel, automatically. And all you have to do is come up to a Jew and tap it in some fashion. You have to look for the point of entrance, and that's not always an easy task. But if you find the point of entrance, the Jew is mis'ur automatically to begin thinking and searching for the Ribbono Shel. This is the idea of Pinto Yid that actually becomes part of their descendants. In other words, that Jews have the desire internally to seek God, which means to perceive the Ribbono Shel, to know him, and to get close to him. Jews have that internal desire, and that's why you find Jews are so often part of these cultist movements. Mm-hmm. What are they doing there? They're out of all proportion to their numbers, because Jews are tremendous seekers. Internally, in their neshama, they search for the Ribbono Shel. So therefore, they'll seek. That explains why. Because the Pinter Yid always forces the Jew. That Shirish of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov forces the Jew to seek meaning, seek God. But unfortunately, he many times goes astray because the Yitzhahara, Sitra Achra, tries to show him other directions and so on. But that desire to seek, and why the Jew is always out of proportion to his number in all these crazy cults, and Eastern religions and Buddhists and so on, that is why you have that as a result of this concept called Pinter Yid. Now, the Gemara also says, Ma'aminim u'bnei ma'aminim, which is the same idea, that Jews are ma'aminim, they believe in God, and they also are bnei ma'aminim, they are descendants of those who believed in God. And who are those? The others. Why does the Gemara say, Ma'aminim u'bnei ma'aminim? Because the reason why Jews are ma'aminim is because they have it indented in their souls from the ma'aminim that they are descendants of. In other words, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov has given the power or the urge, the search, the intuitive desire to seek the Ribbono Shel, put it in their neshamas because they sought the Ribbono Shel through Yedi and Emuna, therefore that's embedded in their neshama. So every Jew has that Pinter Yid to seek God, to perceive the Ribbono Shel, and to get close to him. And all you have to do is get to the right entrance, and you've got it. Now, that's in terms of the idea of perceiving God. In terms of publicizing the Ribbono Shel, again, all Jews have that. Jews have very strong social instinct. They stay together very much. They interact with other Jews, and you always find Jews trying to impress their views on other Jews. That's classic. Where does that come? That's the desire of the Jews to publicize, to impress upon others, especially other Jews, what they believe in themselves. This is the idea of Jews. Jews always are telling what they think. They always have a day about something. Then that comes from the fact that Jews have it in their nature to proclaim what they believe, to tell it to other Jews. Unfortunately, sometimes it's wrong, and they try to proclaim and tell it to other Jews. But that nature, the desire to tell other Jews, not only other Jews, that desire to tell even Goyim about what they believe, that comes strongly from the others which proclaim the Ribbono Shel throughout the Bria, because they were involved in proclaiming, publicizing, telling the other people the truth. So Jews are always caught up in proclaiming the truth to others. They're always at the head of activists and these kind of the activists and so on, you know, people who are always trying to opt for change in that sense, or to proclaim truth. So political movements and so on, Jews are always ahead of political movements and so on, because Jews have a desire to proclaim what they feel is true. Unfortunately, sometimes what they feel is true, of course, is wrong, so it's also bad in a certain sense. But that desire to proclaim comes from the second sub-tafkid, which is to proclaim the truth, which is part of the tafkid of to promote the Ribbono Shel altogether. Therefore, we see that the Jews therefore inherited from both sides the perception, which is at Pinter Yid, and also the idea of the proclaiming the Ribbono Shel, which gives them that strong instinct to interact or to impress other Jews and even Goyim. Now, this is the idea of this is the idea so far of the second tafkid. Now, what I want to mention is that, again, is that when I talk about the Ovis, as a result of the Ovis work, the avoid of the Ovis, that they were able to give it to their Klai Israel, I mean as a national trait, that Jews as a national people, as a people, have this trait. I'm not talking about specific individuals, but Jews as a nation unto themselves, a national trait or characteristic, have this as a result of the avoid of the Ovis. Now, one more thing. Each of, even though he perceived the Ribbono Shel'olam as a result of his own Yegiyah, his Yediyah, and his Emunah, and also he publicized this concept, right? And we see also how it's part of the Merkava, and also how the Jews inherited these qualities in their own Neshama. It's important to note that each of the others perceived the Ribbono Shel'olam in the same way, but each one has had a strong emphasis in the way he perceived the Ribbono Shel'olam. Avram perceived very clearly and very strongly the chesed of the Ribbono Shel'olam to a tremendous degree. He was tremendously in tune with the idea that the Ribbono Shel'olam is a Moedig Bal Chesed. In other words, he perceived that quality of the Ribbono Shel'olam in an extremely strong degree. Of course, he perceived the Ribbono Shel'olam in all the other areas as well, but this is what really made a Rishon in his neshama in that sense. Therefore, of course, he was involved to an incredible extent in being a Baal Chesed, which I'll talk to a little later in terms of the other Tafkidim of the others. Now, Yitzchak perceived the Ribbono Shel'olam in terms of his Gevurah, his incredible strength, his ability to control and to regulate the Bria, and to be exact in justice. That's what Yitzchak perceived, this Gevurah, this awesome strength of the Ribbono Shel'olam. Therefore, Yitzchak, of course, personified the Gvura of the Ribbono Shel'olam most intensely. Of course, Yitzchak perceived the other things also, but for some reason, this hit him the most. And, of course, Yaakov perceived the truth of the Ribbono Shel'olam most strongly. In other words, the idea of Torah, which is truth, he perceived the idea that the Ribbono Shel'olam has an incredible amount of that. The right combinations that must be had in terms of one's midas, how it's given, he perceived that. In other words, there's both chesed and din or gvur in the universe, in different measures. That's the idea of emes. He perceived truth means that he perceived that the Ribbono Shel'olam acts in accordance with truth, which is really chesed and gvur. Therefore, Yaakov perceived that mostly, and therefore each of, as a result of that, the fact that they perceived these traits of the Ribbono Shel'olam more acutely, they therefore proclaimed this perception most strongly to others. Avram proclaimed the Chesed, Yitzchak the Gvura, and Yaakov the Emes most strongly because they perceived especially these characteristics of the Ribbono Shel'olam in the Bria. I'll talk about this a little more when we talk about the next Tafkid of the Ovis. So therefore, that's the second Tafkid of the Ovis. The idea, the promoting the concept of the Ribbono Shel'olam as a Melech and Odin, that these basically are subdivided into two ideas, to perceive the Ribbono Shel'olam and to proclaim this concept. Also that these ideas are rooted in the Merkava and that each of has a different chelik in this perception and proclamation, publicizing, and also what the inheritance of we as Jews means as a result of their avodah. And the fact that they are Shirish, and therefore they can give this over to their descendants. Now, the next Tafkid is the idea that the Ovis spent a tremendous Yegiyah labor in taking the will of God, to take Hashem's will, and to make it their own. This is what they did. The next Tafkid is to reflect the will of God, to reflect it in terms of one's own will. In other words, to take the will of God and to make it the content of one's own will. So where your will coincides with the will of the Ribbono Shel'olam. In other words, that they would adopt Hashem's will as their own, of course, through Bechira, through free choice, free will. This is what the next Tafkid of the Ovis was. And of course, that would also mean that they would adhere to his will in a very strong fashion. This was the next Tafkid of the others. Now, This also is further is subdivided into two ideas. To adapt the Rabbeinu Shem's will as one's own is basically divided into two ideas. One is to adapt the Rabbeinu Shem's characteristics or his attributes and assume them as one's own. Because if a person is a Baal Chesed, obviously he wants to be. His will is to be a Baal Chesed. If God is a Baal Chesed, it means that his will is that he wants to be Meitiv or be a Baal Chesed. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Shem's characteristics or his attributes are nothing more, of course, than a response to his will. Therefore, if the others want to adapt his will, then they would also adapt his characteristics. Now, if you remember what I said previously, that the attributes of God is merely his guise, his projected personality, but bi'atzmusoi, we do not know who and what he is. But in terms of his personality, as he presents himself to the Bria, he has specific traits, specific characteristics, and that is his will. Therefore, the others who adapt that, of course, they adapt those characteristics. In other words, the others would imitate or they would emulate, they would personify those characteristics of the Rabbeinu Shlomo. This is the first subheading under the idea of to adapt the Rabbeinu Shlomo's will as one's own. The second idea, the second heading, or the division of adapting the Rabbeinu Shlomo's will as one's own, is that every Ov adapted the Tariag Mitzvahs. Because it is the will of the Rabbeinu Shlomo at that point in time that these mitzvahs should be observed by man, even though he didn't command man, but it is his will that they should be observed by man. Therefore, they who are very sensitive to what the will of the Rabbeinu Shlomo, they adapted those Tariag Mitzvahs. And included in that is the fact that they were Moiser Nefesh. They would give their lives in order to make sure that they would continue observing those Tariag Mitzvahs. And we see the fact that of course, Avram and Yaakov, we see clearly adopted the Tariag Mitzvahs, because by Avram it says that, Avram observed my Teres, my Mishpotim, my Mitzvah, and so on. The Rosham says that in Breshis. And by Yaakov it says, Im Lovin Garti, I lived with Lovin. So Chazal say that Garti is the same Oisius as Tariag, which means I lived with Lovin and I observed the 630 mitzvahs, which shows us, of course, that Yaakov was observing 630 mitzvahs. Now, of course, if Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov were doing it, of course, Yitzchak was certainly doing it. So therefore, the others were adopting the will of God as their own, not only in terms of the characteristics that they would assume, that they would emulate or personify, but also in the sense that they adopted the Tariag mitzvahs, which is the will of God that these things should be observed by men. And also, they were Moiser Nefesh. That's how strong they wanted to observe these Tariag Mitzvahs. And you see the Mesias Nefesh, of course, by the others, by the Kifshin or Eish that they threw Avram in the fire. Nimrod had him thrown into the fire. If he wouldn't give up his beliefs and so on, of course, and Avram allowed himself to be thrown into the fire, which is Mesias Nefesh for the Rabbeinu Shlomo, to his will, to adopt his will, not give up, the Emuno. And the second thing is by the Akedah, that Yitzchak, of course, gave up his life, was willing to give up his life for the will of the Rabbeinu Shlomo. If that is what God wants, if that's his will, his tzivoy, his commandment, then he is willing. Of course, that has repercussions in terms of Jews, which I'll get into, all these ideas. The ideas of the fact that they adapt his characteristics, the idea of the fact that they observe the Tariag Mitzvahs, and the idea that they must nefesh for those Tariag Mitzvahs, those have profound implications in the internal soul of Klal Yisrael, and they therefore have intuitive feelings in that direction, which I'll get into. In any case, this is the third tafkid of the Oros, is to adapt the will of the Rabbeinu Shlomo, and that is subdivided in the sense of to adapt his will and therefore assume the same characteristics or attributes as the Rabbeinu Shlomo, to personify them. And the second idea is to adapt the will of the Rabbeinu Shlomo by adapting the Tariag Mitzvahs and to be Moiser Nefesh for those Tariag Mitzvahs. Now, the connection to the Merkava, of course, is that the Merkava can only bring the driver to his destination if the Merkava does not have a will of its own. If somebody is sitting on horses and the horses who have a will of their own decide not to do with the driver is going to wind up in someplace else other than the destination he wants, because the horses are embodying their own will. They're doing what they want to do. So therefore, in order for the horses to bring a driver to his destination, they have to accede to the will of the driver and make that their own will. The chariot, of course, is an inanimate object that has no will of its own, but the idea is that the others have to become like a chariot where they resemble an inanimate object, that their will is mamish the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Even though they adopt this will, of course, with free will, bechira, but in essence, they are adopting the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's what the chariot is. The chariot indicates not only the purpose of the chariot, but also the way of getting to that purpose, and that is to become a chariot, to adopt the will of its driver, to become an inanimate chariot, which in the case of a human being means, since he does have a will, and he's animate, is to adopt the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to make that the content of your will. So therefore, that's how the third tafkid flows from the principle or the symbolism of the chariot. Now, what's also important to understand is that, now in terms of how each of observed these mitzvahs, or how each of observed this, we see that each of adopted a different midah of the Ribbono Shel Olam, a different attribute. That what the others, they emulated, in other words, each one emulated the Ribbono Shel Olam in a different respect. Avram emulated the Ribbono Shel Olam most strongly in chesed, Yitzchak most strongly in the attribute of gvura, strength, or din, and Yaakov in the attribute of emes, the desire for, tremendous desire for truth. So we see that each of emulated the Ribbono Shel Olam because each one was adapting the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but each of took on a midah, a specialty in a midah. Of course, Avram was also Gvura and Emes, and Yitzchak was also Chesed and Emes, and Yaakov was also Chesed and Gvura. But the specialty of each of course, was that midah. And one of the reasons why they adapted that specific midah so strongly is because each of came from a different source in terms of the spheres of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that I'll talk about probably next week. In the sense that the aspect of the chesed, how chesed emanates from the Ribbono Shel Olam, Avram emanated from that aspect, therefore he was more attuned to the chesed, he perceived and personified it. Yitzchok was more attuned to the gvura, that sphere which deals with gvura, therefore his shirish came from that side, therefore he was of course attuned to gvura, and Yaakov was tiferes, which is that aspect of truth of the Ribbono Shel Olam, therefore that's where his shirish was. Therefore, he was more attuned to adopting, of course, emes or tiferes, which I'll talk about probably next week. Now, therefore, each of course, emulated or personified the Ribbono Shel Olam in all respects, but most strongly in one midah, because they perceived the most strongly that way, and more importantly, because each one's shirish came from one of those particular spheres, which is the source of the attribute of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Now, this is the idea of the others adapting the will of God in terms of their characteristics. Now, besides the fact that each one, as I said, emulated, each one, of course, observed the Tayag Mitzvahs, as I pointed out. That was each one's chelek. And each one, of course, was Mesu Nefesh for the Tayag Mitzvahs. As I pointed out, Avram in the Kivshan, and Yitzchak, of course, in the Akedah, and even Yaakov by Lovin, were actually to observe the Tayag Mitzvahs, was actually rather a sakonis digger profession. In any case, but there you had the Mesiris Nefesh of each of, the observance of the mitzvahs of each of, and you had the emulation of each of in all the midas, but specifically in one midah. So therefore we see what the tafkid is, right? What the tafkidim are. We see how it emerges from the metaphor of the chariot, the Merkavah. And we see how each of, they observed this tafkid and how each one specialized. Now, how do we see this in Klal Yisrael? What did they leave us as a Yerusha from the fact that they are a Shirish and therefore they can indent or impress upon the Neshama? And we will have a chilek of that Neshama, of course, because they are our roots or Shirish. How do we see it in terms of ourselves? Well, in very interesting ways. First of all, in the fact that the others observed the Tayag Mitzvahs, right, there was a tremendous ava in observing the Tayag Mitzvahs. When the Jews came to accepting the Tayag Mitzvahs, what was it? Nasa v'nishma. It was really relatively much easier for them because they had a desire to accept the Tayag Mitzvahs. which means they had a desire intuitively to accept the oil malchus shemayim, the yoke of heaven. And this, of course, was given by the others. In other words, that the Yidden are much more readily, it's easier for them to accept the will of God, to accept the kingdom of heaven upon themselves, which is a Tayag Mitzvah. And you see that, like I say, by Matan Torah, when not only did they accept it by saying Naaseh V'Nishma, but Naaseh V'Nishma came first, which is a qualitative or superlative form of acceptance, where they said, we will do because you said so, we're maminim, and then we will understand. Then we'll try to understand. So not only did they accept it readily, but they accepted it in an incredible way. Whereas, if you recall, the Goyim, every one of them rejected it when it was offered at the time of Matan Torah, which I mentioned previously. So therefore, the aspect, the tafkid which the others did in terms of accepting God, were readily given over to make it easy for the Jews to accept the Torah, even though they had gotten out of so many hundreds of years of slavery and already listening to the will of some other master, right? So you think that these people would want to be free by now. Adrabah, they accepted the Torah, they traded one yoke for another yoke, and they recognized what the yoke of the Rebbeinu was, and therefore they readily accepted it because of the avoid of the others. Now, that's in terms of accepting it. Now, in terms of adhering strongly to this will, Chazal say, interestingly enough, that if Klal Yisrael, if im einam neviim b'nei neviim, if they are not prophets, then they are sons of prophets. What does that mean? It means that if they are not prophets because their maisim do not allow them to be a prophet, means they have not worked for the stage of prophecy, they are automatically sons of prophets, which means the avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who are neviim, that they are sons in the sense that they automatically, intuitively have the characteristics of a prophet. And you know what that is? That they intuitively know the Rotzon Hashem. Jews have an intuitive feel of what the will of God is, even if it's not necessarily told them. That's the idea of, if they are not neviim by virtue of their own maasim, they are intuitive neviim. They are intuitively aware of what God wants. And this is brought up beautifully by the story in the Gemara where they asked Hillel, they said, what happens if somebody forgot to bring a knife on Pesach to Shech the Korban Pesach, and Pesach happened to be on Shabbos? So we know that Pesach is Derech Shabbos. In other words, if Pesach comes out on Shabbos, you can Shech the Korban Pesach on Shabbos. It's Derech Shabbos. It suspends the laws of Shabbos. What happens if you forgot to bring the knife? Since you could have brought the knife yesterday, then bringing the knife itself does not suspend Shabbos. So what's the halacha? So Hillel told them, I forgot. But he said, if the Jews are not Nevi'im, they are B'nai Nevi'im. That's where the statement comes from. Let us see tomorrow what they do. What do they do? So it says the Jews, they took their knives. So he saw the Jews on the Mamash in Pesach, and it was Erev Pesach or Shabbos. So they looked, they watched, and they saw that the Jews, and nobody told them this, that the Jews, they took the knife, and if you brought a Korban Pesach, it was a goat, so they stuck it in its horns. And if they brought a Korban Pesach, it was a sheep, they stuck it in its wool. And that way, so really you're not allowed to carry it, but they allow the animal to carry it for them. And even though a person is Mitzuvah, he's commanded on Shvisas Behemter, which means that he cannot allow his animal to do work, but this is Shelo Kederach. It means it's not the normal way for the animal to carry something in its horns and in its hair, and that Chazal permitted. And when Hillel saw that, it says he was Niska, Rav Niska. He saw it and remembered the halacha from Shmai V'Avtalion. He said, I remember that Shmai V'Avtalion said that if you forgot to bring a knife, stick it in the horns of the goat and put it in the wool of the tzoin. Which shows you that the Yidden intuitively knew what to do. That's what he said, if they're not Nevi'im, B'nei Nevi'im Heim, they automatically, intuitively know the will of the Rebbeinu Shem, because the others were so strong in not only accepting the will of God, but in adhering to the will of the Rebbeinu Shem. Therefore, the Jews also have that quality. And so therefore, we see that the Jews have the quality in accepting, that's Naaseh V'Nishma, in adhering, Im Einam Nevi'im, B'nei Nevi'im Heim, they can understand intuitively what the will of the Rebbeinu Shem is, besides accepting it. What about the Messias Nefesh? And that comes, of course, from the Akedah of Yitzchak and basically from the Kivshin of Avram, and also from Lovin in terms of Yaakov. And there we see Because Chazal say, very interestingly enough, that the Jews, that there are three kinds of people, entities, which are Murdik Azus, very obstinate, very obdurate, a tremendous Amkishi Uref, a stiff-necked. He said the Jews among the nations are the most stiff-necked of all people, a dog among animals is the most stiff-necked among animals, and a rooster among birds, you know, rooster, very, very stubborn. Therefore, the meat of Azus comes from the others, because they were very stiff-necked. They refused to give up their convictions about their belief in God, and they would rather go to the altar or to the fire or to be destroyed than give up the quality of Azus. Therefore, the meat of Azus, of course, comes from the others. That quality of Azus is what enables the Jews to be Mersin Nefesh for the Tayyad Mitzvahs. And therefore, the Jews, they emulate this from the Shirish of the others, and as a result of that, they also have this Azus, this obstinacy, this stubbornness. That's why the Rebbe Hashem calls themself, you're a Kshei Oref, I'm Kshei Oref. You're a stubborn, a stiff-necked people. And Adraba, they got this from the others because of their Azus against not believing, or the temptations that they had not to believe in Rebbe Hashem, the Messias Nefesh. And like Chazal say, that the Jews are most stubborn among the nations, besides the other two, and therefore this quality of Azus in Messias Nefesh with Tayyag Mitzvahs comes from the others. I will have to continue the other meters, how the Jews inherited that from the others, next week. Now, just to provide a brief review of last week, what we're doing now is going into the conceptual structure of an Ov. In other words, what are those ideas which generally create the concept of Ov? In other words, I'm not going into the Ovs themselves in terms of the Chumash and analyzing the incidents and the stories about them, but I'm really presenting the general idea of an Ov, and what does it mean to be an Ov, a patriarch, like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And last week I had mentioned that there are basically four elements to this idea. The idea of a tafkid, which is the task of the Ov. The second idea is the basis of that task in the metaphor of a Merkava. The third idea was that each Ov's chelik, or each Ov's contribution toward that, a fulfillment of that task. And the fourth, of course, is the idea that each of course, was a shirish, a root for Klal Yisrael, and as such, somehow gave over an inheritance to Klal Yisrael because each of us really partake of the neshamas of the others. Now, I had mentioned that there, last week I had mentioned three. The first idea, the first tafkid, or task, is the idea that the others had to procure the concept of Masakin, that they had to get this idea of a Masakin, which I explained previously. In other words, Avraham initiated that concept, Yitzchok maintained that concept, and Yaakov finalized that concept. This was a contribution, of course, to each of toward the task of procuring the concept of Masakin. In addition, that which they bequeathed to Klal Yisrael, of course, was that all Yisrael, every Jew, can now be a Masakin, to remove the deficiency of Hester, which was created by the Ribbono Shel, and also that deficiency which was created by man. The second task, which I had mentioned last week, is the idea that each Ov had to promote the Ribbono Shel as a Melech, as an Adon, to promote God as King of the Universe, as a Master of all. The idea of Yichud Shlitosoi. And I had mentioned that this is further subdivided into two different tasks. One is that they themselves had to perceive the Ribbono Shel, and the second is that they had to proclaim this concept, to publicize the concept that the Ribbono Shel is a Melech. These are the two tasks under the idea of promoting the Ribbono Shel as a Melech. Now, I had mentioned also last week how this is based in the concept of a Merkava, and also that the contribution of each of course, in terms of what they proclaimed and therefore what they perceived in a special way, was the Chesed of Avraham, the kindness of Avraham, the Gvur or strength of Yitzchak, and the Tiferes, the beauty of Yaakov. And I had mentioned that the repercussions in terms of their descendants is that in the first task, in terms of perceived Ribbono Shel, we have the idea called Pintaliyid, which I explained last week. And the idea of proclaiming the Ribbono Shel Olam, and to publicize this, that idea, that which was left in terms of Klal Yisrael, is that Jews tend to be very idealistic. They tend to be proclaim their ideals, and they generally have activist tendencies in terms of what they believe. The third idea, which I had mentioned, the third task of each of, was to adopt and to adhere to the Ribbono Shel Olam's will, to accept his will, to adopt it, and to strongly adhere to what God wants. And I had mentioned that this is further subdivided into two tasks. One is to adopt Taryag Mitzvahs, because that's God's will, that people observe the 613 commandments. Therefore, this is what the Ovis did. And the second is that the Ovis were involved in personifying those attributes in themselves, that they themselves lived, emulated these attributes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I had mentioned how both of these ideas, or rather the idea of adapting and adhering to the Ribbono Shel Olam's will, how this is based in the metaphor of Merkava. And that each of, in terms of what each of's contribution was, that each of observed the Taryag Mitzvahs, and they were also Moisei Nefesh, they gave up their lives to observe the Taryag Mitzvahs. And also, this is in terms of the Taryag Mitzvahs, and also in terms of personifying the attributes, that each of took a specific midah, as I had mentioned, Chesed for Avram, Gevurah for Yitzchak, and Teferes for Yaakov. Now, in terms of what the Ovis gave over to Klal Yisrael as a national trait or national characteristic, I had mentioned last week that in the idea of Taryag Mitzvahs, in terms of accepting the Taryag Mitzvahs, this made it easy for the Jews to say Naaseh V'Nishma. In terms of adhering to the Mitzvahs, which the Ovis did, they adhered very strongly to these Mitzvahs. This gave the Jews the ability to know the Ribbono Shel Olam's will. Therefore, that's what it means by Im Einam Nevi'im B'nei Nevi'im Heim. If they are not prophets, they are the sons of prophets. In other words, they intuitively know the will of God. And in terms of the Ovis adhering to the will of God, to the Taryag Mitzvahs, and the fact that they gave up Mesiras Nefesh, Jews have a national trait of being Azus. Jews are very stubborn, very obdurate, the Amkshe Erev, and they will rather let themselves be killed than give up or renounce that which they truly believe. This is the idea of Azus in Jews, and that comes from the Mesiras Nefesh of the Ov. This brings us to the end of the review, and I am now into the last idea, the last characteristic that the Ovis gave to Klal Yisrael as a result of the personification of the attributes of God. In other words, that's where we're up to now. Now, we see that the third task was to adopt and to adhere to the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which means the Taryag Mitzvahs. And I just mentioned now how this idea was communicated or given over, transmitted in terms of a national trait to Israel, to Jews. What about the second task, or the second subtask, of personifying the attributes of God, which we know each of did? That Avram did Chesed, Yitzchak did Gvura, strength, and Yaakov did Tiferes, truth, which, and these ideas I'll explain later what these midas are. In any case, what was the national trait that the Jews took as a result of the fact that the others personified those midas, those attributes? What do we Jews today have as a result of that? And the answer to that is that the Gemara says, an interesting, there's an interesting Chazal that says that Klal Yisrael, Jews, have three different attributes. This is a fundamental nature of Jews. And it says that whoever has these midas should stick or cling to these people. What are the three midas that Chazal say that Klal Yisrael has? They're Baishonim, means they're shameful, they have the trait of shamefulness. They are also Rachmonim, they are compassionate, and they are Gimli Chasodim, they give a lot of acts of kindness, charity, or whatever. This is what Chazal say, that all Jews have those three attributes. And if we look closely, we can see that each one of these attributes really comes from one of. And again, we see that as a result of the fact that the others personify the attributes of God, which was the second subtask in the general task of adapting the Ribbono Shel'Olam's will and making it as one's own. Therefore, they of course personify these attributes, which is the will of the Ribbono Shel'Olam, since he has them also. Therefore, we find that these three attributes, which Chazal say, are really nothing more than the inheritance of that which the others gave to their descendants, Klal Yisrael. How do we see that? Well, let's take a look at Baishanim. What does Baishanim mean? A Baishan. Baishan means one who is shameful, humble, humility. In other words, there's no arrogance. One who is shameful, there's no arrogance, there's no conceit in that individual. When does a person become a Baishan, shameful? When a person understands truth. A person is very humble in the face of truth. It's when a person doesn't perceive true reality that he's very arrogant. But however, when a person perceives truth, he's humble, he's a Baishan. The Midah of Yaakov was Emes. Yaakov Avinu was a great pursuer of truth. And of course, part of that truth is knowing exactly where one stands in relationship to the Ribbono Shel'Olam. Yaakov perceives himself in relationship to the Ribbono Shel'Olam as of course totally insignificant. And of course, he summed it up when he was running away, when he was going to meet Esav. He said himself in that prayer, "Katonti mikol hachasodim," that on the contrary, I am very small in terms of, in other words, I don't deserve all the chasodim that you've given me. That's a baishan, that's shameful. That's an individual who's very humble, very embarrassed or shameful in terms of taking chasodim from the Ribbono Shel'Olam and admitting that, look, I'm not really worth anything anyway. I mean, I can't say that I was deserving of the tremendous chasodim that you gave me. So Yaakov said, "Katonti mikol hachasodim," that I really not have deserved all the chasodim that you've given me. That's the midah of Baishan. And why did Yaakov, we see it especially in Yaakov, because Yaakov was a pursuer of truth, which is a pursuer of what the true reality is. The hasoga of the yichud of the Ribbono Shel'Olam, that the Ribbono Shel'Olam is absolute in the universe, and that man in himself is really insignificant, and the whole idea of it is that man should adopt and do the will of the Ribbono Shel'Olam, and that itself is what gives the chashivas to man. So therefore, the midah of Baishanim comes from Yaakov. That's the first midah. The second midah, Rachmanim, compassionate, which means not to be cruel, not to be an achzor, an individual who's cruel, a person who has no mercy on another individual. This comes from Yitzchak. And it's interesting, and Yitzchak, of course, personified the midah of Gvura. What is Gvura? Gvura is an individual who has tremendous strength, ego strength, to fight one's own desires. That's a gibor. Like you see in Chazal, it says, "Eizeh gibor akivish is Yitzray." Gvuro strength means an individual who's able to control his impulses, the Yitzhara, akivish is Yitzray, his inclination. So therefore, that's what gvuro is. There's a tremendous strength in the individual to fight those impulses, to fight the Yitzhara. And therefore, Yaakov, of course, Yitzchak, was very much into self-perfection, not to allow the Yetzirah in any form to interfere with his avodah. This was the major idea of Yitzchak. So, interestingly enough, that the Gevurah of Yitzchak, which we will see later, personifies really Din. Why do we assume that Yitzchak is the one who shows compassion and not Avram or Yaakov? There's an interesting Gemara in Shabbos that says that the Ribbono Shel'Olam in Osed Lavoi is going to go over to Avraham Avinu and he's going to tell him, "Bonecha Chotu, your children have sinned." So Avraham Avinu is going to say, "Well, then destroy them for your sanctification of your name, Akidish Mecha." And if they did take the sins, then justice has to be done. So if they are worthy of destruction, so destroy them. It's interesting that Avram should actually say this. But anyway, without going into the deeper meanings of that Gemara, just understand it in terms of the three of us. Then the Ribbono Shel'Olam says, "Well, let me take this to Yaakov." And he went to Yaakov and he said, "Bonecha Chotu, your children have sinned." So Yaakov said the same thing. "Well, Yimochu, let them be blotted out, Al Kiddush Shemecha, for the sanctification of your name." Here's what Yaakov said. So the Ribbono Shel'Olam said, "Well, neither of these, of course, have defended Klal Yisrael. Let me go to Yitzchak." And the Ribbono Shel'Olam went to Yitzchak, and the Ribbono Shel'Olam said to Yitzchak, "Your children have sinned." So Yitzchak said, "Your children? originally my children, originally you called them your children. You said they were B'ni B'churi, my son, my firstborn, by in Mitzrayim. Now you call them my children? That's what Yitzchok said. And then he starts tining with the Rebbeinu Shlom, making a cheshbon, a reckoning. And he says, look, he says, let's be realistic. How many years does a man live? He lives 70 years, right? So 20 years you can take right off, because before 20 you don't punish anyway for sins, so you can't punish Klal Yisrael. 25 years, so there's only left 50. 25 years you can throw away, because a person sleeps for only close to half of his lifetime, so that you can throw away. So they obviously couldn't be doing sins then. There's only 25 years left, so I'll tell you what. So 12 years, 12 and a half years of that 25 years, you can disregard, because basically those are basically a person is engaged in his own needs, toilet needs, in prayer and eating food. I mean, quarter of a lifetime goes away on just fulfilling basic needs. There's only 12 and a half years left. Okay, you take them all. You take 12 and a half years and you mechapa on Klal Yisrael. And if you don't want to take them all, then I'll take half and you take half, and we'll both be mechapa on Klal Yisrael. And if that doesn't work, I have to take all 12 and a half, then let the fact that I went to the Akedah, let that be atoned for the 12 and a half years left of a man's life that you say Klal Yisrael lived. So the Baruch Shem, of course, so what do we see there? We see that Avram and Yaakov didn't come up with Rachmonus, because Rachmonus means to suspend the judgment against Klal Yisrael. Instead, Yitzchak is the one who came up to defend Klal Yisrael. So you see that the meat of Rachmonim comes from Yitzchak. And the interesting idea is that Gvura, the interesting idea is that what's the logical connection? Why is it a man who's goyva on his own Yitzhahara? Why is he also compassionate to the others? Because a man who's involved in Gvura, in strength, in working on himself, knows what it means to fail. He knows how difficult it is to be goyva against the Yitzhahara. And therefore, because since he's involved in this tremendous conflict his whole life, therefore he has an understanding what this conflict is all about, how difficult it is to win. And therefore, if somebody doesn't win, then he has compassionate, because he can identify with somebody who also went through that conflict and failed. So he can identify with that, because usually a person who's involved in Gevura, which means that being Kovish, Teron, Yitzhar, and so on, he can understand what it means to fail if others fail also. So therefore, the union of Rachmonim, compassion, of course, comes basically from Yitzchak. This we see from the interesting Gemara, of course, of Shabbos. One can talk in terms of what was the meaning of Avraham Yaakov, but I really want to just bring out the idea of Rachmonim and how this Midah is really logically extends from the personality of an individual who's a Gibor, who fights the Yitzhahara, who is Kivish Yitzroy, and this is Yitzchak. The last trait of Klal Yisrael, of course, is Gimli Chasadim, which of course is Chesed, and that classically comes from Avram. Chesed Titin Chesed Le Avram, Emes Le Yaakov and Chesed Le Avram. And the idea of Chesed, of course, to Avram is because Avram personified kindness, and the fact that he was always trying to help somebody else, his Achnosis Orchem, as we see in Parshas Vayera and so on. Therefore, the Midah of Gimli Chasadim, the tendency of the Jews to always be kind. Jews are always involved in social areas of helping, humanitarianism. Take a look at many hospitals, they're all the Jewish hospital of this, Beth Israel Hospital, Mount Sinai, all of these hospitals, Jewish hospital of chronic diseases, whatever. These hospitals were started by Jews. Jews are very philanthropic by nature. But they extend a tremendous, they open up all kinds of a gemach, milas chasodim, to lend money and so on. Jews are always engaged in philanthropic kind of pursuits. And this midah comes from, of course, Avram Avinu, who is, of course, a Baal Chesed par excellence. That's in your gimel chasodim. Unfortunately, Jews also have the same midah. Jews are very big liberals. They're very tolerant of other people. And they're very much in allowing other people to also to live and let live kind of policy. Liberalism comes from the idea of Gimli Chasodim. And as we know, Jews are very liberal-minded people. And therefore, in the elections, they always tend to vote that way. Jews are liberals. And sometimes it works. Civil rights movements and so on. Jews are always active in liberalism, liberal kinds of issues and so on. And unfortunately, many times it backfires, because the very people that they do favors for and extend kindness, usually turn around and of course castigate and criticize the Jews for some absurd kind of thing. But the nature of the Jew to be liberal in political issues and to tolerate other people comes from the midah of gemilut chasadim, because Jews have a tremendous amount of kindness. There you see. You see actually that the task that the Ov did, which is to personify the midas of the Rabbeinu Shlom, that third idea, which goes under the idea of to adhere to God's will, this is given over as a national trait to Klal Yisrael, as we see in the Gemara, that they have these three midas, these three attributes or traits, because the Ov left us three distinct basic traits. Now, we're now into the fourth midah. This ends the third idea, the third task, of course, which is to adopt and to adhere to the Rebbeinu Shlom's will, which subdivides itself into listening to the Tayag Mitzvahs and being Moser Nefesh for the Tayag Mitzvahs. And the second subdivision is, of course, to personify the attributes. We are now into the fourth task of the Ovis. And the fourth task of the Ovis is to produce the Tikkunim, to actually make sure that the universe is corrected. And you recall what that was, that the original state of the universe was deficient in the sense that the presence of the Rebbeinu Shlom was removed from the universe, and it was the task of man to bring the Rebbeinu Shlom back by recognizing that God is supreme. And then Adam Rishon contributed to the further removal of the Rebbeinu Shlom by doing the sin, as I had mentioned previously. So therefore, the task of the Ovis is actually to masakan the Bria, whether it be the Chasan or the Kilkel, means whether it be the Hester, the concealment of God's presence, that comes as a result of man's contribution, which is Kilkel, or the Hester, which comes as a result of God's contribution, which is the original Chasan. In any case, the Ovis had to actually produce the Tikkunim, which were not being produced for 2,000 years, since Adam. And where do we see the concept that produced the Tikkunim? Because in the Psikta de Rav Kahana, it says that when Adam, that in the beginning by Adam Rishon, the Shechina was betachtonim, that the Shechina was on earth, and only a very small amount was actually hidden. However, after the chet of Adam Rishon, the Shechina went up the Milo, and after the Marble and so on, the Shechina went up to the seventh heaven. There are seven heavens, or seven different levels of spirituality. In any case, that it went up to the seventh heaven. And there it was when Avram came along. As a result of Avram's Avoda, right, which we had mentioned, the Shechina went from the seventh to the sixth. As a result of Yitzchak, from the sixth to the fifth. As a result of Yaakov, from the fifth to the fourth. And then all the way down to Moshe, which I'll mention later, it went all the way down, and by the time Klal Yisrael got out of the Mitzrayim, was all the way down back on earth. Okay? What is the concept of the Shechina going from up till down? Isn't that the idea of removing the Hester? Mm-hmm. That's what it means. In other words, well, as the Shechina gets closer to earth, it means that is the Tikkun. Mm-hmm. Formerly the Shechina was away from earth, right? Or was driven away. Now it's being brought back slowly to the earth. And that's the concept, that each Ov brought it back to each level of a Shemayim. It descended each level. And that means, of course, is what's being said. That is the union of the Tikkun, which means the Ha'ora, means to bring the Rebbeinu Shlom back into the universe. And we see it as a progression where the Shechina, which is the presence of the Rebbeinu Shlom, as manifested in the creation, we see it being lowered closer and closer to earth. So therefore we see that the others were involved in actually bringing the Rebbeinu Shlom back into the Bria, where mankind would realize the true reality that the Rebbeinu Shlom, of course, is the Melech of the Bria. This is the idea of the Shechina coming down. Therefore, this is what the fourth task of the Ovis, to actually do the Tikkunim, and as we see in the Medrash, the Psikta de Rav Kahana, we see it actually being accomplished by the Ov. Now, this, of course, emanates from the metaphor of a Merkava. Remember the concept of Merkava, chariot, that the Ovis are the chariot. In that metaphor is embodied the whole idea of what the Ov is, and actually what Klal Yisrael is, because each Jew is a Merkava, just like each Ov is a Merkava. Because what are the results of the chariot when it finally brings the driver to his destination? That the driver is at his destination. That is the Tikkun. before the Ribbono Shel Olam was absent from the universe, right? And it's a job of the Ov and of all Klal Yisrael after that to bring God back into the universe. That's the job of a chariot, to bring the driver back to his destination. So therefore, if the chariot accomplishes its purpose, right, then what happens? The driver is now at his destination. So therefore, the idea of to produce tikkunim is really the, again, embedded in the idea of Merkava, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is back into the Bria as a result of the work or the avodah of the others. Now, notice that the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Shekhinah, is back again in the Tachtonim, where it was previously absent. And that we see by the previous Medrash, that the Shekhinah was in effect brought down. In any case, this is how it's embedded in the idea of the Merkava. Now, what was each Ov's Chelek? I'm going through the different elements, if you recall. What was each Chelek of the Ov toward that Tikkun? Well, if you recall, that Avraham Avinu was a Shurish of the Mashiach ben David, right? As I said previously. And as such, he was involved, basically, in his Pashtus Kedusha, to spread the religion, or to spread the nature, or the knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam throughout the world. That's what his task was. And that is the task of the Mashiach ben David, if you recall. His Pashtus Kedusha throughout. And that's what Avram was. The Mashiach ben David, the Shurish Mashiach ben David, which was involved, of course, in his Pashtus Kedusha. Yitzchak was Gevura, as I had said before. Therefore, his task, of course, was to fight the Yetzer Hara, and that's the idea of the Mashiach ben Yosef. Yitzchak is a Shurish, the Mashiach ben Yosef, and the task of the Mashiach ben Yosef specifically is to subjugate the Sitra Achron, not to allow it to conquer, but to subjugate it under Kedusha. Therefore, Yitzchak was involved, of course, in Kivish is Yitzray, to conquer the Yetzer Hara. And as such, of course, he was the Shurish of the Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, it's important to know that Yitzchak's job was internal. Means it wasn't an external where he had to go into Golos. Means, you know, this which is the Sitra Achra outside. He had to go among Goyim. And he had to fight to remain a Jew even among Goyim. Yitzchak's main idea, because he lived in Eretz Israel, and he didn't go into Golos like Avram did when he was in Ur Kasdim, or Yaakov did when he went to Lovin in Mitzrayim. His main idea was Eze Gibor, what kind of Gvura, an internal Gvura, to fight the Yetzer Hara internally. This was what his job was, as the Mashiach ben Yosef. Now Yaakov was basically, ultimately Yaakov was both, that he encompassed both the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David, and I'll get more into that when we talk about Yaakov, what that really means, because that can only be understood in the context of Yaakov and Esav. In any case, Yaakov was ultimately involved in both ideas. Now, we see Yaakov being involved in both ideas, because in the beginning, the Torah says he was the Yeshiv Eholim, that he dwelt in tent, which means that his job was to learn Torah and to develop himself in terms of as much of a tzaddik as he can. This is the idea of Ispashtis Kedusha internally, means to spread Kedusha throughout the self, means to learn Torah, to try to do as much mitzvahs as possible in a very superlative way. So therefore, originally Yaakov Avinu was involved Yeshiva Holam, which means to spread Kedusha, that's the internal spreading Kedusha. That's the Inyan of Ben David. Later, when Yaakov went into Golos, he was involved in what? In subjugating the Sitra Achra externally. You see? Subjugating the Yetzer externally, because he had to remain free, of course, of the influences of Lavan, and then later on, of course, Mitzrayim. But Be'ikah, he had to remain free of the influences of Lavan. Therefore, we see that Avram, who was a Shurish of Mashiach ben David, was involved in spreading the knowledge of God throughout the world, and that is the task of Mashiach ben David. But that's an external Hispashtus Kedusha. Yitzchak, who is the Shurish of Mashiach ben Yosef, was involved in Gvura, which means to fight the Yetzer Hara, but that's an internal Kfiya, means subjugation of the Yetzer Hara. And Yitzchak, of course, was Mashiach ben Yosef. Yaakov originally was the Inyan of Mashiach ben David, so therefore he was Yeshiva Yoholim, which means that he would spread Kedusha. However, that was an internal Hispashtus Kedusha, which was different than Avram's Hispashtus Kedusha, which means to spread it out to all mankind. Later on, as a result of Esav's failure, which we'll see later, he then, of course, assumed Mashiach ben Yosef's task, and therefore he, of course, went into the Golos in terms of Lavan, and he, of course, he fought the Yetzirah externally. It means he made sure that he wouldn't be influenced by Lavan's lifestyle, and in general by the people of Choron. So therefore, this is what each of's contribution to those tikkunim are. Now, the last element is what did they leave over to Klal Yisrael as a result? Essentially that what they left over, that all Jews are now involved basically in these two ideas. All Jews are mesaken in the sense that they can all correct the deficiencies and the damages of creation. They can all deal with the concealment of the presence of the Baruch Shem in the Bria, and that all Jews are able to correct those kind of deficiencies. Therefore, they can produce the necessary tikkunim, or corrective measures. So therefore, all Jews are either from the Mashiach ben Yosef side or the Mashiach ben David side, in the sense that all Jews are always involved in those two kinds of directions. Either they are contending with the Yetzirah, the internal one and the external one, or they are contending with Hispashtus Kedusha to become righteous, either internal or also external. And this basically divides itself in three different kind of situations that Jews find themselves. Either they're fighting the Sitra Achra, which is the Yetzirah, and they're trying to remain at Tzaddik, or the Yidden are suffering at the hands of the Goyim, and they are trying to remain with the belief in God and also in the Taryag Mitzvahs. And the third situation is where the Jews are trying to proclaim to the knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam to all Jews and to all nations. So therefore, Klal Yisrael is involved in all those tikkunim also. We now see what the general structure of an Ov is. And if you want to go back into the Chumash, you'll see that all the different maisim and the incidents that happen with the Ovis are nothing more than reflections of these four different basic kinds of tasks. And this is what I really try to essentially give you. To summarize, in terms of what is the conceptual structure of an Ov, basically it boils down to three different ideas. The first idea is to procure the concept of a mesaken. That's the first idea. That's what each Ov tried to do, to make sure that they would fulfill the task of why man was created in the first place, in order to reveal the Ribbono Shel Olam throughout the Bria. That's the whole tachas why man was created. And the reward would be that to the extent that he revealed the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Bria, that is the exact amount of revelation that he would experience in Olam Haba, if you recall. So therefore, the first primary purpose of an Av is to make sure that he is the one that can do these things. The second primary purpose of an Av is to produce the tikkunim, to make sure that the universe does have the Ribbono Shel Olam back into it. And that is done by, as I mentioned, the two specific ways. One is to promote the Ribbono Shel Olam throughout the Bria, and the second, which means to perceive and to publicize this. And the second method or instrument that one does the tikkunim, of course, is by adapting and adhering to the Ribbono Shel Olam's will, which means Taryag Mitzvahs and also the Midas. Those two ideas, to promote the Ribbono Shel Olam and to adapt his will, those are the two mechanisms, the instruments, by which the Ovis are masakin the Bria, and that's what they wanted to in the first place. And the third major idea in the Ov is that not only would they be involved in being masakin the Bria through these two tasks, but also they would be the shirish, the root for their descendants, that their descendants also would be involved in being masakin the Bria. Until what's called the Tikkun HaKloli, the general state of the universe would be completely corrected, and that will be by the Mercy of Mashiach. And you should know that every Jew has one aspect that he has to fix. Every Jew, his specific task is to masaken some aspect where God is hidden in the Bria. And I had once mentioned that quite a while back, exactly how that's manifested. But in any case, there you have it. The three fundamental ideas of an Ov is to procure that concept of Tikkun Misakin, to produce the Tikkunim through the two ways of instruments, to promote the Rebbeinu Shlom and to adopt his will. And the third idea is to bequeath this or to transfer this on to their descendants, that they should also be involved in these ideas, these Tikkunim. And you should know that is the entire tachas of an Ov, in terms of what they themselves had to do, and in terms of the fact that they had to transmit this to the Klal Yisrael. And the reason why the Ovs were always concerned with this, and that is the whole concept of an Ov, is because the whole reason that why man was created was to do this task, to make sure that the Rebbeinu Shlom again is revealed in the Bria, and that is done by man's recognizing the Rebbeinu Shlom. And like I say before, and to the extent that man would recognize and testify to the unity of the Rebbeinu Shlom, to that extent would he be masig that unity or that experience of the Rebbeinu Shlom in Olam Haba, Mida Keneged Mida. This ends the idea of the general structure of the Av. It sounds a little theoretical, but it's very important to know, because if you understand this, you understand basically what an Ov is and what the whole mission of Klal Yisrael is. Basically, it's summarized in just these three ideas. Now, where we see this illustrated, there is a famous statement that's brought down in the Medrash Tanchuma, the Midrash Tanchuma, and the Ramban mentions it. It's a very famous Ramban that's brought down in Lech Lecha, in Parashas Lech Lecha. It says in the Medrash that Kol Mash Iru Leovos Simin Lebonim, everything that happens to the fathers, the patriarchs of the Ovos, is a simon that this will also happen to their descendants. In other words, to put it shortly, Maisa Ovos Simin Lebonim, that which transpired with the Ovos will occur to their descendants. This is a very famous maimah which Ramban brings down, and it's repeated many times in many different shurim. In other words, what does that mean? It means basically that the history of the Ovos is a forerunner. It foreshadows the history of the descendants. That's what this simple statement means. Most people understand it on that level. However, once we understand that the Ovos, one of the major tasks of the Ovos, is to be a forerunner of their descendants, that their descendants also should be involved in the same work as the Ovos, right? Therefore, this then takes on a deeper meaning. It's the reverse. Not that the Maisa Ovos are a simin lebonim, but the Maisa Bonim is a simin leOvos. Because since the idea is that that if an Ov does something, for instance, Avraham Avinu, if Avraham Avinu would adopt or personify the Mid of Chesed, what would happen would be is that his neshama would be distributed to all Klal Yisrael, and everybody would intuitively feel like doing Chesed. That's the idea. Therefore, if that is the case, if Avram has the power of being a shurish, means a root, and Yitzchak and Yaakov, whereby they can actually influence all neshamas of Klal Yisrael intuitively or internally, if that's the case, then whatever happens to the Jews must happen to the Ovos, so that they can set the example and the pace, and therefore it can go back to their kids. You see the way it works? That whatever would happen to Klal Yisrael would happen to the Ovos, that they can act as a shirish, that they can embed or make an impression, a lasting impression of their acts on their neshama, and this would enable Klal Yisrael later on, would also go through those events to succeed in accomplishing the whatever task they had to do. You see, it works the reverse way. What does that mean? It means that we see that the future events of Klal Yisrael is purposely given to the Ovos, that they should act in a certain way, and as a result of their acting that way, this would become embedded in their neshama, and that neshama, which is distributed to Klai Yisrael, would then aid Klai Yisrael in withstanding the test situations which they have to withstand after the Ovis. See, that's a different way of looking at Maisa Ovis Simon Bonum. Everybody looks at the reverse, that Maisa Ovis Simon Bonum is that which happens to the Ov, happens to the children. And it's interesting and worthwhile to examine minutely the entire story of the Ovis, and that's why the Torah spends so much time bringing them out. Because if you look at it, you will see how each one is actually a reflection of what happens to Klai Yisrael through their 4,000 years of history. It's an interesting study in itself. What I'm saying is the reverse, is that the reason why the Ovis, what happened to the Ovis is a simon lebonim, is because since it had to happen to the bonim, therefore the Ovis had to engage in those very situations and incidents in order that they should embed in their neshama the prerequisites which would enable Klai Yisrael thousands of years later to withstand the different nesiyonos that they would go through. In other words, the principle of their being an Ov, this is the principle of the matter. The fact that the Ov was a Shirish, that dictated that they would live future events. It's a topsy-turvy way of looking at it. And this is really the fundamental and profound way of understanding what that Medrash means and what the Ramban really means. And just very superficially, we can see how this really manifested itself in terms of what the Ovis went through, also went through Klai Yisrael. For instance, when the Ramban says, when Avraham Avinu went to Eretz Yisrael, his first stop was Shechem. And the idea of Shechem was that he should mispalel for what would happen later to Klai Yisrael by Yaakov, that Dinah would be abducted, and that Shimon and Levi would of course attempt to rescue her by killing out the whole city. So Avraham came there, of course, to be mispalel for what would happen in the future. So that's one kind of incident. Another incident is by Chevron, where Avram and Sarah were both promised that Meloch Mimcho Yetzeu, kings will arise from you. And Dovra Melech began his kingdom in Chevron, the exact same place where the Melucha royalty was said that what happened to Klai Yisrael, that's of course where the Melucha happened. That's another example. Another example is that when Avram came to Eretz Yisrael, there was a great famine and he had to go to Egypt. And of course, he hid the fact that Sarah was his wife because maybe they'd kill him and abduct Sarah. Therefore, that provided again a basis for Klai Yisrael, because if you recall, why did the Jews go to Egypt? Because of hunger. Yaakov and his sons went to Egypt because of hunger, because there was a raw of birds, just like Avram. And while in Egypt, of course, what happened? That the Egyptians had designs on the males and not on to kill them, in the sense that that was the gzera that all males should die. Again, you see the idea that what happens to Avram happens to the Yidden. And just like Avram went in and went out untouched, the same thing Yidden went in Mitzrayim and went out untouched. See, again, you see the idea that whatever happens to the Ovis, happens to the Klai Yisrael, because since they are a Shirish, they must go through the future events in order to give the strength of Klai Yisrael to withstand the different ideas going on. And basically they do that in two ways. We have seen how the attributes of the Ovis, Chesed, Gvura, and Tiferes, and so on, truth, how these themselves have actually been inherited in Klai Yisrael as national traits, because these traits enable the Jews to go through history doing the mitzvahs and withstanding the entire idea of Yetzirah and being Moisa Nefesh, as I had mentioned, that they have Azus and so on, stubbornness and so on. So therefore the Ovis gave or transmitted the inheritance of the national traits or characteristics. So in this way they were Mice of a similar bottom. And the second idea is that the Ovis also went through the same incidents, the same kind of events that would also transpire to Klai Yisrael, to give Klai Yisrael the koyach to withstand what would in the future happen to them. This is the second idea of Ovis. And this is again the idea of Mais Ova Simin Lebonim. And what it really means is that Simin Lebonim is really Mais Ovas, the reverse. A good way to understand it is like a mother or father, both of them, can pass on to their child resistances to diseases, right? It doesn't mean that the child won't get sick. The child will get sick. But what it means is that the child has the antibodies to fight. It's able to resist the disease, not succumb, and also, therefore, to become healthy. The same idea, that the others gave the resistances to Klai Yisrael to not to succumb to the forces of the Yetzirah, to the forces of Yisurin, the forces of pogroms and persecutions and all the thousands of years that Jews had to go through. Therefore, not that the Jews won't be subjugated to this, but that they will be able to fight successfully, marshalling their own forces, because they also have Bechira. They have, even though somebody has antibodies resistant, he still has to do the right things. He has to eat properly. He has to sleep properly. He still has to do the correct things if he's going to win out with the disease, or he's going to allow the antibodies to fight the disease. The same thing. Jews still have to withstand the Nisyonos over the thousands of years. But since they have the antibodies, the characteristics of the Ovis, and the Kurchus that the Ovis gave them through their actions, therefore, using their own Bechira, they're able to fight and withstand and not succumb to the Yetzirah and to all the forces that would tend to destroy. That analogy is a good analogy in terms of the distinction between the Jews' Bechira, because they have to have Bechira too, but they have the resistances from the others. So the combination of the resistance of the others and their own fighting, maintaining a regimen to conquer the disease, is what eventually gets them out of the disease. I want to go into the idea of the structure of the chesed and so on, in terms of some of the spheres, which are very important to understand, and then we will go back into Yitzchak.